pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Crunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Here. The consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one condition motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have one item, which is approval of the November 28, 2017 City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented.
I would make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second. Okay. Second. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. At this point, we would like to hear citizen comments on any non-agenda item. And please present your name for the record. Yes.
Michelle Courtwright. I'm just here to wish the commissioners a happy holiday season and to let you know how much we all appreciate the good work that you do.
Michelle.
We prepared these special boy mugs that I thought you would enjoy. Your coffee or your tea.
Many of the
things that we have
in the world. So,
thank you again, guys.
Wow.
This
is from Serendipity. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm Ashley of the Blue Boy Area Chamber, and I just wanted to remind everyone that this Thursday is our business after hours. Holiday Business After Hours, hosted by Resort Rental North at the home of one of their clients, which will be at 221 North Street, and that's this Thursday, December 14th, from 5:30 to 7:30, so we hope you all will make it. And then coming up on January 18th is our annual awards gala, and registration is now open for that as well.
Thank you. Any other public commentary? Moving on to correspondence. Do you have anything, Mike?
I don't. No, I do not.
Okay. And moving on to city manager's report, Mike.
Just a few items received this evening. And a piece of good news with regards to the efforts to create a trail between the city and Boyne Falls. We learned that the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund is recommending a $295,000 grant to fund the second phase of that trail. That would be from the Boyne Falls School through the Boyne Mountain properties and ending in the village of Boyne Falls itself. With regards to an application for a grant for the third phase of the Boyne City to Charlevoix Trail, that failed to move forward this cycle due to funding issues within the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. So we'll still see the second phase completion that we saw, but then there'll be a gap between until the next third phase is funded. Due to seasonal weather, and it is snowing, and it is supposed to do that this time of year, and mainly with regards to the recent high winds, work on the pavilion next door has slowed down to a crawl since our last meeting. The contractor isn't concerned at this point with regards to meeting his timeline. So, we've had some people express concerns that the ice pole has not arrived in Sunset Park yet. We've had other pressing matters that our water wastewater department personnel had to work on. And that has delayed its arrival, but it should be installed shortly, possibly later this week. I talked to the commission over the last couple of meetings with regards to repairs on our older of the DPW standing trucks. And we had some work done on that, but it did not work out as we had hoped, where the truck was not able to be recertified for use. So rather than risk putting it on the road and having a failure, we've taken it off the road. We've sent it out to a shop where we've had all the equipment, like the stainless steel box and the hydraulics and things that are used to distribute the sand, removed from that truck. And it's going to be replacing, those pieces will be moved onto one of our other dump trucks that can handle a load that has an old style box on it. So we'll be combining those two trucks and have the sander back on the road probably sometime next week in a new configuration. Want to let you know that one of those two old pickup trucks that you saw hanging around here over the summer has been sold, and we're working on getting rid of the other one as well. If all continues to go well, the ice rink up at Avalanche should be open for the public use this Saturday. The DPW, with the change in weather and with some help from our trail room, thank you, Mike, has begun work on the rink itself. We have a couple layers of ice on that, and there should be more going on tonight, and again, we'll keep our fingers crossed. The warming house did open for operations last weekend, and people are starting to use it. I'd like to wish everyone here and the entire Boyne community a very Merry Christmas, and I'm looking forward to a very happy and productive new year in 2018. If you have any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to try and address them.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
I'm good.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
We have in our packets for us commissioners to be updated with everything that's going on with the board. We have the draft minutes from the Main Street meeting on November 7th. We have the draft minutes of the November 7th Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. We have the draft minutes of the November 9th Parks and Rec Commission meeting. The draft minutes from the November 13th, 2017 EDC meeting. The draft minutes from the November 13th Historical Commission meeting. Draft minutes from the LDFA meeting, and draft minutes from the November 20th Planning Commission meeting. Is there any questions, commissioners, on those draft minutes?
Good.
Thank you. We don't have any old business, and moving on to new business. Item A, Fat Bike event requests. Michael?
Hi. So since we spoke last, we got permission to get the groomer and use the groomer a couple times. It works really well. It exceeds expectations. The picture on the front of the cover was the first groom. We got the first snow. After the last weekend, we got a couple more inches, and it worked very well for that also. Great. So using the trails that are groomed, I like to be able to take a fat bike race starting at Sticks Brewery. We'll go up Park Street and then lap around some of the groomed trails at Avalanche, then come back down Park Street and finish in front of Sticks Brewery. This is also in conjunction with Sticks' 1-year anniversary, so they're having their own separate party for their 1-year anniversary. So the fat bike race will start in the morning and early afternoon, and then the participants and their families could attend Stick Brewery party. But also this event, the Fat Bike Race, all the proceeds from this will go towards Tomboy, which helped build the Avalanche trails and all the other trails that are in here that are utilized for mountain biking. So this is all planned to be on January 20th. That's when Stig's Brewery's party is.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So this matter went before the Park and Recreation Board at their meeting last week. They had discussions with Mike, thanked him for his efforts on the grooming. And ultimately, after some discussion, they approved it in your agenda packet. They did want to make sure that there was coordination to make sure that people could make it from Stig's to Avalanche safely on South Park Street. So there will be coordination with Mike and also with our police and DPW departments to make sure that that's addressed as well. There'll be a certificate of insurance provided by Mike and his organization, condemned by the city with regards to this event. And based on those discussions, the Park and Recreation Board, made a motion and it was approved unanimously by all those members present to recommend the city commission approve this event.
Thank you, Mayor. Is there any other staff input? Or is there any other public input? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Steve Van Dam, and I'm on the Tonopah Michigan Mountain Biking Association Board. And just here representing the board saying that we're supportive of what Mike is doing in Avalanche Trails. And he's generously offered to use this as a fundraiser for Tom, although he's actually doing this race, but we think this falls right in line with what Tom was hoping would happen, you know, when Joker Trail would be bringing economic activity to town and bring people to town and stuff, and so I just want to express Tom's support for everybody, so.
Thank you. Any other comments?
It should be pointed out that Commissioner Conklin is a member of the Park and Recreation Board, was there as well, too.
Okay. Let's go to commission deliberation. Ron, what's that?
Well, I reviewed the recommendation and I fully support it. And thank you very much. The whole team that's made all this happen, so it's wonderful to have your involvement. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Dean?
Yeah, it looks like an interesting event. I think if you suggested to somebody from, let's say, downstate, you want to have an event, and you want to ride bicycles in the winter in the woods in northern Michigan, you might question your sanity. That may be true, but in any event, it looks like a great event. The only question I had was wondering, like from your perspective, are there any additional or out of the ordinary costs that might accrue to the city as a result of a review of this event?
No.
Okay.
It can be fun.
That means you're going to get your fat tire?
I'll think about it. Then make a decision.
There's actually a large group of people that are living in Grand Rapids and probably south that are really interested in coming up that weekend.
I can imagine. Yeah. It's something, you know, one more thing to do in the winter in Northern Michigan.
Yeah, certainly.
Thank you. Sally?
I think it sounds like a lot of money. Yeah, I'm all for it.
You?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And Michael, I don't think the community can thank you enough for what you're doing at Avalanche, doing the trails, the walking trail, the mountain bike trails, doing all that grooming, all on your own expense and on your own time. It's just a great recreational place year round now.
Yeah, thanks for your work.
Thank you very much for doing
sure.
that.
I echo all my commissioners' sentiments. I think it's going to be fantastic. Last year, there was an event at the hill, and there was, you couldn't find a parking spot. They were parked a mile away, and it was fantastic, and this is going to be bigger and better because it's our city park. It's our event. It's our local businessman doing the so fantastic. And I think it will do exactly what we want it to do, is bring people into town, right?
I go back to probably about 10 or 12 years ago, we were having discussions about how we became more of a winter city community. And we fought since probably before I was here about leveling those peaks of, you know, you have a lot of activity in the summer and, you know, during the different seasons. And I think this is another step towards providing, like you said, other activities to help level that. And provide year-round income for some of our businesses too.
That's right. And if you need a fat tire, I know where you can buy one.
Or rent one now, I think.
Or a rent one.
Yep.
Fantastic. Okay.
I'll make a motion that the City Commission approve the request of Michael Courtright of Michael's Racing to hold a fat bike race from streets on South Park Street to and through Avalanche Mountain on Saturday, January 20th, 2018, subject to details being worked out with city staff.
Second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're free to stay.
I got the money.
Yes, go through my head. Item B is the audit presentation. Joe Bruin from the original company. We just had a two-hour seminar training session with Ms. Berman. It was very much to our benefit, and the board of yours.
All right. Thank you very much. First, I'd like to thank the city commissioners for allowing our firm to be able to serve The city very much is a pleasure working with Cindy and Michelle and Mike and all the city staff. They do a wonderful job of aiding us throughout the entire audit process and to make things go very smoothly. So before I get involved into the actual audit presentation, I have a couple of certificates that I'd like to present. I'm honored to be here this evening to present this Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting to the City of Boyne City. The Certificate of Achievement program has been in operation since 1946. The purpose of the program is to encourage and assist governments to prepare financial reports of the highest quality for the benefit of citizens and other parties with a vital interest in the government's finances. During the half century the program has operated, it has gained widespread recognition as a premier indicator of excellence in governmental accounting and financial reporting. To earn the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, the city had to substantially conform to the program's demanding criteria, which go well beyond the minimum requirements of generally accepted accounting principles. The receipt of this award reflects the professionalism and commitment of numerous individuals, as well as many hours of hard work. It also reflects a high degree of dedication and leadership on the part of the Boyne City City Clerk and Treasurer, Cindy Rice, the Boyne City City Commission, and the entire Boyne City team. The Government Finance Officers Association hopes that this award to the city will serve as an example and encourage others to strive for the same high standards in their own financial reports. Therefore, it is my privilege to present to the Mayor, Tom Niehammer, on behalf of the Boyne City City Commission, and the Boyne City City Clerk and Treasurer, Cindy Rice, in recognition of her efforts and those of the Boyne City staff, these certificates of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. Congratulations, I have one for both Cindy first and for Mayor Niehammer as well.
Roughly 1% of the local units of government in the state of Michigan get that award, so it is rare to achieve it. So definitely is a big accomplishment, and kudos are earned by the city for doing so.
We are that 1%.
Yes.
Speech.
So navigating through the audit report to see the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, you can find that on page 7. Of the audit report. It's dated April 30, 2016. The GFOA award is always a year behind. But the city has already submitted the April 30, 2017 comprehensive financial report to the Government and Finance Officers Association. The fully expects to earn this award for the second consecutive year.
for the year ended April 30, 2017. In the audit report, which is 117 pages long, I'm not going to hit on every single one of those 117 pages, but starting on page 12, we get to the single most important paragraph in the audit report, which is our opinion. And as I mentioned, staff was very cooperative, very helpful in assisting the audit process. We were able to verify the revenues and expenditures and assets and liabilities of the city as of April 30, 2017. And accordingly, we rendered what is referred to as an unmodified opinion. And actually, you can find that on page, the very next page, page 12. We state that in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly the financial position of the city as of April 30, 2017. If you want to skip forward one more page, you can find that on the third paragraph on page 12, right here, which is, it doesn't sound flattering, but it is the highest level of opinion that we can render on financial statements. It's referred to as an unmodified opinion, or more commonly thought of as a clean opinion. So it does mean something to earn it, but the city should always have the goal of receiving the unmodified opinion. Going through the rest of the audit report, the next section that I typically take readers through starts on page 15. As we refer to as management's discussion and analysis of this 117-page report, I would consider this to be the cliff note version of the audit report. And it gives, it's the one section in the audit that has financial highlights, so we can see some bullet point ratios and numbers that are significant to the city. In addition to that, it's the one area in the audit report where we get to see comparative financials, so we can see how the city performed in 2017 compared to 2016. Just to get some historical context as to what the numbers mean. And in addition to that, there is narrative that explains some of the significant reasons for the changes in revenues and expenses for each of the past two fiscal years. So starting on this first bullet point, the assets of the city exceeded its liabilities at the end of the year by $23,920,463, and that's referred to as net position. It's the same basis of accounting that a corporation would use to measure its equity. It doesn't mean there's $23 or $24 million of cash sitting in a bank account. This is a theoretical number because it includes all the infrastructure, buildings, vehicles, equipment, things that aren't necessarily spendable at the government's disposal, but still assets. The residual is about $24 million of net position. What we do want to see is that number increasing over the course of time. And even though it is hypothetical, we do want to see that number improving to make sure the long-term financial condition is preserved. The second bullet point down goes into the governmental funds. This is the short-term basis of accounting, or cash basis, so to speak. All of the city's funds have $5,816,832 of fund balance, and that is a decrease of $3,667,735. And that was an intentional decrease as a result of the city receiving bond proceeds in 2016 that were used to finance the construction of this building, as well as the Department of Public Works. So for that reason, there was about a $3.6 million decrease in fund balance across the city's funds. Of that total $5.8 million, 34.7% or $2,018,645 is available for spending at the city's discretion, or it's more commonly referred to as unassigned fund balance. And the third bullet point for the unassigned fund balance for the city's general fund as of April 30, 2017, of $2,241,764. That number is about 72% of the city's annualized budgeted or annualized expenditures and transfers out. In the state of Michigan, we normally see that number ranging anywhere from 25% to 100%, so the city's in a very secure spot, not too much, not too little, right where it needs to be in regard to its unassigned fund balance. So the first number we looked at was $24 million in net position. The $2.2 million is a much better representation of how much cash or resources that the city had at its disposal at April 30, 2017. To cover the day-to-day cost of operating the city. So it's available to cover wages, utilities, contractors, things of that nature. Next, if you turn to page 18, we get into the comparative assets and liabilities of the city for each of the past two fiscal years. Just a couple of numbers I wanted to point out here. First, this is now year two that the city has had to report it. It's a net pension liability. It's a relatively new governmental accounting standard board pronouncement that the city needs to adhere to and has adhered to. And you can see the number about three quarters of the way down the page. We've got the net pension liability of $3.3 million as of April 30, 2016, and $2.4 million as of April 30, 2017. As a result of implementing not only the net pension liability, but the associated deferred pension inflows and outflows, it gets somewhat complex, but the end result was about $104,000 of additional expense that the city had to recognize to implement and continue implementing the new pension reporting standard. So not a significant increase overall, and over the course of the next 22 years, we expect to see that $2.4 million approach and become zero as the city becomes fully funded following its actuarial term of 22 years. Next, if you want to turn two pages to page 20. We get a look at the comparative revenues and expenses of the city for each of the past 2 years. And a couple of rules that I wanted to point out here. First, property taxes showed a healthy increase, which is about five rows down from the bottom. We can see that in 2016, in the total government column, the city reported $2,863,397 of property taxes. That number climbed to $3,293,985 for the year ended April 30, 2017. There's really two reasons for that increase. First, the residents approved a village to fund the long-term debt obligation associated with the bond, with the construction projects. In addition to that, the city received $237,000 from the local community stabilization authority for back property taxes that were forfeited as a result of new tax legislation that was passed in Lansing. So those are the two biggest reasons for that very healthy increase in property taxes that the city was able to report last year. In addition to that, I wanted to show the change in that position. If you go three rows up from the bottom of this schedule, you can see that the city shows a $1,014,178 increase in that position for the year ending April 30, 2016. That number stays positive for the year ending April 30, 2017. At $758,303. I would think of this in the corporate world as net income. So over the course of time, we want to see the city's net position increasing, and that certainly was the case in the past two fiscal years. Next, if you turn to page 30, the schedules that we've looked at to this point have been on the long-term basis of the county, so we've seen infrastructure assets and net pension liabilities. Page 30 is our first look at the modified accrual basis of accounting, and I mentioned before, it's kind of like a cash basis accounting. So what is the total level of resources that the city had at its disposal at April 30, 2017 covering the city's immediate obligations? So instead of calling the residual net position, we call it fund balance. Here we can see the general fund, which is the very first column. I'm sorry, please, a few more pages ahead. So here we can see the general fund has total fund balance of $2,329,752, of which $2,241,764 is unassigned. And then across all of the city's funds, we can see that there's a total fund balance of $5,816,832. If you want to turn two more pages to page 32, we'll look at the change in fund balance for the year ended April 30, 2016. Overall, in the financial highlights section, I mentioned there was almost a $3.7 million decrease in the total fund balance. We can see that right here, five, six rows up from the bottom. So we'd like to see fund balance increasing, but again, it has to do with $4,267,502 that the city expended for capital improvement projects right here on the capital outlay line. Most important fund for the city is its general fund. And we can see the general fund actually shows an increase in fund balance for the year of $818,902. So while total fund balance has decreased, we can see total fund balance is decreasing. The general fund had a healthy increase of almost $818,000. So the most important fund in the city did have an increase, which is a very encouraging sign. Next, if you go to page 60, we get into the footnote section of the audit report. And page 60 shows a couple of schedules related to the city's net pension liability. A couple of the beginning net pension liability, the ending net pension liability, and the various increases and decreases.
And here we can show that, we can see that the city had a net pension liability of $3,371,214 as of December 31st, 2015. The MERS actuarial evaluation data is on a calendar year as opposed to the city's fiscal year, which is April 30th. So there's a little bit of a gap there. But that is the amount that was reported on the city's statement of deposition as of April 30, 2016. We see the various increases and decreases. Really, the one I wanted to point out here is the fact that there was net investment income, which is a good thing, with both cities' investments are earning positive earnings, or showing positive earnings. 2015, there was a net loss on the city's assets. In 2016, the market performance was much better. And we can see that $683,914 was attributed to investment earnings during the year, which certainly helps decrease that net pension liability. As a result of all the increases and decreases, the total net pension liability decreased by $987,000, leading to an ending net pension liability of $2,383,672. The next schedule down underneath that shows what happens if the market bears a rate of return over the next 22 years at three different rates. So assuming that the long-term rate of return on the city's assets and its MERS fund is 8%, the city is going to pay the $2,383,000. The market does 1% better than expected. That number decreases by about $700,000. So over the course of 22 years, the total amount sent from the city to MERS, $700,000 less, optimistically thinking. If the market does 1% less than expected, it only earns a rate of return of 7%. You can see that number increases to $3,286,399. So about almost $1 million increase in total payments to MERS over 22 years if the market only earns a return of 7%. And the idea here is just to give readers an understanding of what the sensitivity of what the market performance is going to do to the related cash flows. A couple more quick things on page 70. We have a two-year analysis of the increases and decreases in the city's net pension liability. And I just wanted to point out the city's funding percentage as of December 31st, 2016. It's a little bit off because of the timing of the fiscal year and the actuarial evaluation. If you want to scroll down just a little bit. About two-thirds of the way down, you can see it. Again, that net liability pops up again right around $2.4 million. If we take that number and divide it by the total, if we take the $6.5 million, let me start over here. If we take the total $8.9 million of total liabilities that the actuaries have identified with the city's long-term provision of pension benefits to its employees and retirees, and we subtract all the assets that the city has set aside to cover that liability, of about $6.5 million, we get to the $2.4 million net pension liability. If we take the $6.5 million of total assets and divide it by the total pension liability of $8.9 million, we can see that the city is 73.18% funded as of December 31st, 2016. MERS likes to see that number be north of 60%. The city is at 73%, so you guys are 13 points ahead of where MERS likes that number to be. So in a very healthy condition in terms of funding it. Over the course of 22 years, that 73% is going to continue to climb up until the point where it reaches 100% funding. And if you want to turn one more page, the last item, two more items I wanted to turn out, page 71. This shows how much the city has had to pay into its MERS plan for each of the past 10 fiscal years. You can see a steady trend of increasing defined pension costs that the city has put into its plan, ranging from $161,000, which I guess $153,000 was the lowest amount in 2011, all the way up to $252,664. So that number continues to ramp up to make sure that the unfunded pension liability will approach and become $0. As importantly, you can see that the city has met its obligation every year. So every amount that the actuaries have set as the annual required contribution has been matched and paid into the MERS plan, so there are no accumulating deficits with regard to the city funding its net pension liability. Some cities are struggling to make those full pension payments and are falling behind. So the city is staying current with all its obligations. If you turn one more page to page 72, the last thing that I wanted to point out is the city's retiree health care plan.
There is a new governmental accounting standard board statement that's going to be effective for the city of Boyne City on April 30, 2019. We have one more year, the city has a year and a half roughly to brace for it. And it's going to have a minimal impact, but it will be it will have an impact on the city's unrestricted net position. There's $460,827 of OPEB, retiree health care benefits, that will need to be paid out to retirees. That is going to be reported as an OPEB liability, just like we're reporting the net pension liability as of April 30, 2017. So that is going to be a new liability the city has to report on its April 30, 2019 financial statements. But the unrestricted net position of Boyne City back on page 18 was $783,921. So even if the city absorbs the additional $460,000 of additional liability, there still will be a positive unrestricted net position. Most of our cities are demonstrating negative unrestricted net positions even before implementing the ASB's statement number 75. So again, just years of prudence with regard to managing the city's expenses will allow you guys to be able to withstand that. The new reporting standard. So those were the highlights that I wanted to cover, and I'm more than happy to answer any further questions that the city commission might have.
Thank you very much. I think Cindy understood that better than anybody else in the room. Is there any questions from staff or the audience? Is there any questions or discussion from commissioners? Yes, sir.
The only thing I wanted to point out is that the full audit report is available here and at the library for anybody in the public to go and take a look at. It's also available on the city's website as well, too. So you don't have to try to digest it all tonight. You can take a look at it at your convenience, and staff and Joe are available if any questions arise.
Yes.
So what is MERS? Is it a nonprofit or what is MERS?
The Michigan Employee Retirement System. It is an agent multiple employer defined benefit pension plan. It has its own retirement board, so or investment committee. Any local unit of government that wishes to participate in this pool plan can participate. All of the assets are segregated and tracked individually for all of the individual local units of government. So the city of Boyne City, even though it's pooling its resources with hundreds of other local units of government, you can see specifically how the city of Boyne City's investments are performing, how much was contributed, all that stuff is broken down and tracked separately. So the advantage of that is you have the fiduciary responsibilities rest with MERS. As well as the responsibilities for reporting and making sure that the actuarial evaluations are performed, and the MERS plan itself is subject to its own audit requirements for transparency and things of that nature. So it is an agency developed to support local units of government with the retirement funding.
Thanks.
Who does the oversight on MERS? Besides the board itself?
I believe they are a component unit of the state of Michigan, so Treasury is responsible for their financial performance. They also are subject to an annual audit. And before we can rely on the actuarial evaluation that is provided to us by MERS, we have to go and review their audit report and make sure that all their controls are effectively operating and that they've received a clean opinion before we can actually rely on the numbers that are provided to us.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes. Just a comment. You know, the award speaks for itself, but as a new commissioner, Cindy and Mike, I thought that this report was very extraordinarily helpful to a new person to understand the fiscal situation. I think I'm more glad now that I'm a county commissioner or city commissioner, because I learned that we're in really good financial shape.
Sure.
As a result of looking at that and hearing your comments as an auditor, I think that is a tribute to the city's management and to the fiscal responsibility to our citizens. So, thanks.
Thank you, Dean. Anybody else? I would echo Dean's comments that we We are very fortunate to have a professional staff, and Cindy and Mike and all of our staff works together to do this, and I appreciate your professionalism and your knowledge and your presentation, and thank you for a job well done.
All right, thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay. Anything else, Mike? Go ahead.
No, there's no, this is not an action item. There's no action that's required by the commission.
All right.
So do we keep this under our pillow?
If you have a hard time sleeping, it might be possible.
Dad, I can hear you.
Yeah, that's a little county test.
There you go. Good for propping up that coffee table.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Travel safe.
Okay, moving on to item number C, SAW grant aerial imagery bids. Scott?
Thank you, Mayor. Last fall, the city received approval for its stormwater management and wastewater grant application that was submitted in 2013. For the benefit of our newer commissioners, I can give a little history of what this program was and where it came from. In 2002, Michigan voters approved the creation of the Stormwater Quality Initiative Fund. That was about a $1 billion fund, a bond that was created for stormwater quality. And in 2013, the state allocated about $450 million from that fund to be provided to communities to develop stormwater quality management plans, sanitary management plans, and asset management plans. These projects could include inventorying all your system assets, identifying the conditions of those, giving the municipalities equipment training and software and hardware to help complete these plans and maintain the plans in the future. As part of our project, it was about a $750,000 project. It was 90% funded through the SAW grant. So it's a total commitment of the city of about $75,000 for this plan. When we developed the plan, we were reviewing all the items that we would need in it and creating a budget for it. We looked at our 2004 aerials and contour data that was developed as part of those. And at that time, we thought that would be sufficient for developing these plans. Upon further reflection and the passage of another 4 years, and looking at all the various projects that have been completed in the city, we thought it may be a good opportunity to obtain the new imagery with the contour data to help develop the best possible plan we could. In looking at this, I don't know, Mike, you have some of the images there I provided with the report, but one of those images I showed the area of the 2004 contours, and then also identified the area that we were proposing to develop the new data from. When we developed the 2004 contours, it was specifically for the municipal boundaries and did not contain any area outside. And just the white background and the yellow contours. And what it did do is identify any of the areas of influence of stormwater into the city, which, you know, we do have a lot of that. What we would do with this new proposed project, we gather that data from outside the city limits to identify the flow of stormwater into the city. So those contours would be expanded from about 5 square miles to about 9 square miles. In addition, that would be collecting new high resolution color imagery to also identify all the changes throughout the city. In there, I show a number of pictures from those 2004 aerials of areas, and what's important about those images is what they do not show. And so all those changes and all these areas that are done in red there, those are all the major projects that have gone on throughout the city that would impact the drainage and stormwater throughout the city. Some of those are development projects and land. Some of those are road projects, you know, the paving of new streets or the adding of curb and gutter to various streets, things that do have a lot of impact on the stormwater system. So we reconsidered that and we submitted a request in the DEQ to consider adding an imagery project, a contour project, to our grant proposal, and they did indicate that it would be an eligible expense for the grant. We cannot increase the amount of the grant, but we can reallocate some funds that were within the grant to cover this expenditure. So there are some items that we can move around, you know, some things that we priced out 4 years ago, we didn't have to spend as much money on, like some of the hardware, so that's money that's available to be used in that. I believe some, you know, of the televising or some of the other asset inventory information may come in less, so we have money there to also cover this expense. So we put out the bid, we submitted a request for bids to three different companies. We received them back from Airland Surveys, AeroCon, and Harris Associates. I have complete confidence in all three of these different firms. So I believe it would be best served to go with the lowest bidder in this particular project. The Ayers Associates of $23,760 was the low bidder. They did do the 2004 imagery and contour data, and they provided a great service and a great product, and I have full confidence that they would do it again. So with that, I recommend approving the bid for Ayers Associates of $23,760. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Scott. Is there any other staff or public comments or questions?
I think the existing city, the old city commission, and probably some of the new members too, have seen on a regular basis. We have public meetings, whether it's on a water main extension on West Michigan or some other project, trails, whatever it might be, how much we rely on current aerial photographs to basically look and test some of the concepts and work through the ideas. It's a great tool for us to work with in-house, for the commission to work with, but also as we're sharing information with the public as well too. You know, they say a picture of picture is worth a thousand words. Well, if we have the right base picture to work from, the right base maps that reflect the current situation, it really helps tell our story and work ourselves, works, work through an issue. So I'm very pleased that we're able to basically get this approved as part of our SAR grants. The SAR grant is a funding mechanism, again, where the state pays 90% of the cost, and we end up paying 10% of this cost. So when we're looking at these costs, we'll only be paying 10% of this $23,000 $700 cost. So this whole new mapping system will cost the city per se $2,376. So I think it's a huge investment in our future. We do this every few years, and I think this is just a great opportunity to maximize, in some respects, again, leverage city resources. You can get something 10 times. Good.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? We'll go to board deliberation. Dean, you want to start?
Sure. That's good. The only question I had was, I assume from the need to complete this investment that aerial imagery that's available in the county GIS would not be a current enough or a technical resolution to compete?
Well, to qualify for the SAW grant, you have to have the higher resolution and also the contour information. The county imagery doesn't include that contour information as part of that package.
Okay.
Would it be something maybe the county and the city work together if they were already flying?
I have contacted the county a couple of times and just getting the timing and working together on this particular project. Doesn't seem to be working out the way we would like.
Yeah, we reached out to them before we brought this proposal back to the city commission.
Anything else here?
So the cost, their bid is $23,760, but we're only paying $2,300.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, correct.
Yeah.
What happens is we'll pay the whole $23,000, then we'll get reimbursed the 90% back.
So, Scott, could you just explain like how you would use this? Like, say we build a new road out in front of City Hall here. What information would this provide you?
Well, one of the imagery data is, you know, very good just to see the picture on the ground. And then, two, the contour data to know where the stormwater is coming from, so the engineers can use that in the developing of any mitigation measures that need to be included. But the big part of this data is going to come in the modeling of the stormwater management plan and asset management plans that are being developed. So these are going to be able to create 3D models to help develop that stormwater to look, you know, long range and how you treat stormwater in a holistic approach throughout the whole city.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. That's all I have. Sally?
I'm just amazed.
All right.
Got a couple of questions. Is there any unspent, what is the unspent amount of dollars that are still available on the grant?
Without knowing the ongoing work that C2A is doing right now with the, because they're collecting all the data in the field right now, and I'm not sure where they're at with that particular part of the project. So once we get that data and see how much that is, then we'll know. But I still think there's a lot of items that we haven't even done yet that
So is there an end date as far as the grant expiring?
I believe it's 2019 is the completion date.
Yeah, we have 3 years to implement the entire project. I think we're just probably completing about the first year now.
Yeah.
I think.
Fall last year when the grant was awarded. So.
Yeah. You may recall that we had to wait several years for us to get through the grant cycle. We applied for this 3 or 4 years ago.
2013,
yeah.
And we were the fourth and last cycle that was granted.
So the other question would be the data that you already have in, you know, where all the curbs are and the manhole covers and the signposts and stuff like this that's on the GIS grid there. Do you have to re-enter all this data again once you get the new flyover?
All that data is being collected in the field right now and will be delivered. It's going to be much more comprehensive than what we have now, as opposed to the attributes that they identify with these features. There's going to be conditions and elevations, and right now we have near locations. So it's going to be much more comprehensive data once we receive it.
Ron, if I could jump in. I think with other layers, in addition to what Scott's talking about, like where we got all our traffic signs and things of that nature, those layers will be able to be applied over these new levels of maps without having to re-enter all that data.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So all the work that we've done building up our GIS and mapping system over the years, we're not going to have to start again and go back to scratch to start over. It'll be able to be applied on these new, more accurate maps.
Thank you.
Sorry, I've got more questions now than I did before you started, but two things. One, the county, we made an application with the tribe to do new aerial flyovers, probably not 3 meetings ago, a month and a half ago maybe. So from our side, we did that. But the other question I would have is with your relationship through the planning, with Wilson and Evangeline Township and having such an impact with stormwater, is there an opportunity for Evangeline or Wilson Township to kind of take advantage of the flyover at the same time, try to collect that data for the contours for the stormwater runoff in an effort? Because countywide, it tends to be an issue, you know, and you know, I attended a meeting that Scott was at Wilson Township last week where
We have a case where one neighbor rolls over on the other, and it just so happens to be from the Wilson Township line to the Boyne Valley line. And so that's a stormwater issue. But just a food for thought, if they're going to be flying it over, if there's an opportunity, I'm not saying that the city should pay for it, but if Wilson or Evangeline had an opportunity to tag on to that, to pick up that contour data as well, it might be beneficial.
Thank you. And Chris, just state your name for the record.
Chris Christensen, resident, 111 East Pine Street, Boyne City, taxpayer.
Thanks. And back to commissioners, I'm in full support, and I guess so I would entertain a motion.
Well, I'd make a motion that the city commission approve the bid of $23,760 from Ayers Associates for the aerial imagery flyover mapping, I guess would be the proper term.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Yes, Mike. If I could go back to this map that you brought up, Scott, kind of addressing Chris's question. So right now, the area that's highlighted in yellow is our current existing maps.
Right.
The area bounded in the red line is going to be the new flyover parameters.
Approximately.
I mean, they're not exact.
So there will be some areas included well outside in Wilson Township and Evangeline Township, and probably some Evangeline Township.
Yeah. So have we talked to either Wilson or Evangeline with regards to if they're interested in doing anything like this?
No, I didn't. I specifically didn't think that would qualify under the grant.
I know about that grant.
But I can reach out to them to see if they would be interested.
That wouldn't affect the commission's motion here necessarily, because we're approving this project, we're doing this, but if there is an opportunity, I don't see any reason to not take it.
Yeah, I can contact and see if
that's okay with the commission.
Yeah, I just want to complain. Makes sense.
Okay, so we're ready for a roll call.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to item number D, meeting room rates and regulations.
Well, as the City Commission may be aware, we have five very nice meeting rooms that are available for general use in the city facility. The building that we're in now, this is one of the five meeting rooms. We have the other conference room on the second floor here, and we have three meeting rooms on the first floor as well. Since we fully moved into this building, there's been an outpouring of interest in the use of our available meeting spaces. We've had interest from local service clubs, community organizations, like we did and accommodated in our old buildings. We've had additional interest in everything from school groups, local businesses, to weddings. And as I'm sure you're well aware, the indoor farmers market has been using most of the first floor as public spaces, the lobby and the training room, since November. And plans on doing so until the spring when they move back outside to Veterans Park. The public response and interest in making use of this new community resource has been great, and pretty much what we hoped and designed the facility to do. It isn't just a tool for us to use, we've seen this as a tool for the entire community and the region. Up to this point, we have been using, as best we can, our existing city policies and rates that were designed and implemented for our old City Hall. And as we've learned more about how to use this building and how the public might want to use it. In addition to the memo that I provided the City Commission our current fee schedule, room use priorities, and general regulations. Those are part of the city's adopted fee schedule every year. That's part of our annual budgetary process. And we've used those tools the best we can as we move forward and made them work as we could for this building. On several occasions, we've had to improvise to try and meet the spirit of those documents and practices as we've tested and learned new things, such as, like I mentioned before, working with the farmers market and with Munson Healthcare's Boyne Rehab Center, who's doing a free community fitness class, and I've included a copy of the flyer, downstairs in our training room on a regular basis. Tonight, we're asking the City Commission to review this matter and give further direction to staff.
For your review and consideration, our proposed updates to our fees and use policies. We are proposing that we approve them and continue to use all non-conflicting portions of our existing priorities, rules, and regulations. We're basically modifying what we have to try and reflect the new circumstances we have in this building. We want to see how well those would work, and if necessary, we can make changes as part of our upcoming budget adoption process in the spring. So we're using our old rules. We're recommending that you adopt a set of new rules. Depending on how things go forward, we might have to make some modifications going forward. I'm sure there'll be things that we'll learn or that we haven't even anticipated yet. Being able to deal with this, if you've looked at our existing rules and regulations, you'll see that they've given the city manager a great deal of flexibility to deal with most any circumstances as they arise. Also, I think associated with this discussion is the consideration of whether we should or should not allow the use of alcohol in any of the reserved spaces. We did not allow this in the old city hall, and mainly out of past practice. At least during my time here, we never had a conscious discussion with regards to it. We have already had several inquiries regarding its possibilities from service clubs and community groups to others that would like to hold small weddings or receptions here. I have, after consulting with our insurance company, already allowed two local community groups to do so on a trial basis. They've used this room and we've had no problems. One is as recently as this weekend. We do allow similar uses and functions in our parks. People are allowed to have alcohol there basically for decades, and we've not had a serious problem that I can recall. Many communities do not allow alcohol in their parks. That's just their standard practice, but our practice seems to work fine for us here. Our insurance company has no problem with us allowing alcohol service, as long as the people that are conducting the event are insured and with the city of Boyne City as an additional insured. For the two test cases that we've done, we have received such certificates of insurance. And again, as I mentioned, we've had no problems. Like many things that we've done here in Boyne City, I think it's always worth continuing to try new things, see how they work, and if necessary, adjust accordingly. We kind of got a reputation as finding the community that says yes, and then see if there's a problem, rather than anticipating the other way around and just saying no without doing some due diligence and things of that nature. We did it on ATVs, we've done it on snowmobiles. A lot of communities got a lot real concerned about allowing those things when the regulations changed on them a few years ago. We basically allowed it in the vast majority of the community, and with the option of always going back and revisiting if issues arose. Most of the time, the issues don't arise, and I anticipate that that would be the case here, much like in our park facilities. So such uses, with regards to the alcohol situation, such uses would only be allowed in specifically allowed meeting spaces, could not be kept or consumed in any of our offices or workspaces here in the city facility, or by consumed by any city employees while they're on duty. So it's our recommendation that the City Commission approve the revised city facility space use fees and policies as amended, including specifically permitted use of alcohol as presented as well. And as you're looking through the attachments that came with this memo, I'll just work through real quickly here on the screen. This first page here is the existing priority basis and fee schedule that's on the existing city budget. Here are the general rules and regulations for the uses of our meeting spaces. You know, bigger copies of them, just so showing them so you can see what pages we're looking at. Here was a fitness class that's been put on by the Munson Healthcare One Rehab Center. That's their flyer. Here's the proposed room at the City Commission Chambers. It would have a fee of $100. Now that $100 would apply for groups that are not, as we go back to the original fee schedule,
on the, where they are on the priority schedule, that they aren't the nonprofits, so we're going to be charging that to our own uses, community service groups, chamber of commerce, things of that nature. But if you had an outside organization, a private club, they would come and be paying the $100. And then we have different rates for different rooms that are marked here, the Parkview conference room, the patio, the training rooms, the kitchen downstairs, and the small conference room. We would be requiring a $100 refundable cleaning deposit for groups that were not the nonprofit, things of that nature. Then they would specifically, if they were going to be serving alcohol, they would check this form and we'd have additional paperwork for them to complete. And then there's, again, additional conditions of use and rules that would be more applicable with regards to their building as well, too. So that's pretty much my summary on it. Just in the last few months, I mean, we've only been in here about 4 months where we're actually making use of this space. We've got Consumers Energy in here, we've got the Chamber of Commerce in here putting on events. We've had the Friends of the Boyne River in here, we've got the Boyne Area Arts Collective. Groups that see the value and the quality of the space where they really weren't attracted to our old facility before. We have groups such as the Boyne Boyard that have used our meeting room over here and have been paying a fee versus being able to go to the library where they had that room for free downstairs. And they were comfortable coming in here and paying the fee to do that under kind of our test policy, so to speak. So we think there's demand for this. This is kind of further fine-tuning as we go along. Like I said, there may be further changes, but I think this is a good place to start.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I'll open it up to staff comments. Yes?
I'll be honest, I have Pat and Jane have been busy working on this whole new concept with Mike, so I haven't really had a chance to look at it myself. But with the nonprofit organizations, would they be charged a fee if they were doing a fundraising event, or if they were having a private party, say a Christmas party for that nonprofit group and they wanted to use this facility, would we then charge a fee for them to use this, or would they still be exempt from paying?
Generally not.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Or from the public?
Because the other building is paid off, if you have a debt service on this building, is the funds that are collected for the use of the building going to go to pay down the money that's owed against it?
That was going to be one of my questions, that where does the money go that we would receive? Would it be a separate special line entry that we would use for maintenance or improvements, or as Chris suggested, paid out on the debt? So that would be something that
it's currently scheduled to go into the general fund. The commission, depending on what the fund balance is, you know, we talked about previously about, you know, if the commission wants to pay down this building early, they have the ability to do so.
So when we get to the budget time, that would be one point of discussion.
Yes, I mean, the commission, if it wishes, I mean, we could segregate these fees, and if you wish to, you know, set them aside someplace, that's an option the commission can have.
Even including the fees for MSU extensions. But we'll get to that. Okay, thank you, Chris. Any other comments? Let's go to board deliberation. Sally?
My question was going to be about where the fees go or what their purpose is once they're collected. And for private citizens, it's still be available at these fees of $100?
Correct.
Okay, you?
So, Mike, is the page two, or no, excuse me, page three, so that, the priorities, so that's what the existing rules are?
Correct.
Is that going to transfer over to the new rules?
Correct. The fees that are associated with those figures are kind of merged on that document. Those will be broken out. The priorities very seldom get used. We've really never had to have weigh one against the other. It was a pecking order that's kind of been established to let people know that, you know, if worst case scenario, the city has, the city and the other tenants of this building have first choice of the spaces.
Okay. Well, I'm digesting all of this, you know, the alcohol issue, I'm certainly not troubled by, but just how we manage it and all that sort of thing. And, well, if we could take Michelle, just, she asked about a nonprofit. So if a nonprofit, well, say the Friends of the Boy were here over the weekend, I think, and they had alcohol, so would they have paid a cleaning deposit or anything like that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I'm not sure about the priorities, you know, I communicated a little bit with you about that, and I just think it should be, you know, if the room's open and you have it, you know, it's available to you, you should be able to have it.
Well, previous commissions didn't agree with that. I mean, because I mean, if you look at the low priorities, it starts making sure that the taxpayers of Boyne City get preferential treatment. And if they basically came head to head with regard to submitting an application, that the people that are paying for this building would get first dibs on it versus somebody in a neighboring community that had no real connection to this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just kind of thinking how the library uses their, you know, they have that computer program, they've got the rooms there, you can actually look and see if it's available. If it isn't available, then you can pick another date. You know, it seems like it would be really great to have something like that.
And that may be something that we look at going forward. We'll have to see if there's enough need to warrant that expense and that operation. I mean, there is a convenience factor with regards to that, but the library also has a kind of holding pattern as well, that when some groups make an application, they have to have it approved by you.
Yeah, right.
Book on it, but it's,
yeah, right. 24 hours they look.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes back to the original rules that the city manager has the ability to say yes or no, or implement these policies that the commission establishes.
So is the exercise class doing very well? I mean, are people turning out for that?
It seems to be growing. I mean, it got off to a pretty, just a couple people at it, but it's been going for a little over a month now, or maybe 2 months now. It seems to be growing, so the price is right, and I have a sneaking suspicion after the first of the year, though, a lot of people will be really taking it.
But you know, I think alcohol for a private party of some sort is okay. But I have questions about whether or not it should be for sale. You know, I'm just trying to figure that out. I'm not sure of that yet. So,
and that's one of the things about this. I mean, again, we're not saying that this is the final version, and we're continuing to learn things as well too. But we've had enough requests so far, and we thought, okay, let's start out with something, and if we need to tweak it going forward, we can do it. I think we've got all the necessary safety precautions in place, especially with the first real big hurdle for me was talking to Paul Olson from our insurance company just to see, you know, if he thought we were nuts or something of that nature, and basically with the safeguard that he's suggesting, he saw that as a reasonable concept to try. So, I mean, we will know more in 6 months about it than we do now.
Any other concern I had is about a wedding. You know, I think people plan a wedding out a long time ahead. And so, say they schedule a wedding the first week of January for, you know, September 15th, and then some city function comes up that we need the building, you know, it just creates conflict that I'm not sure how you resolve all that sort of stuff. So, anyway, those are some of the concerns I have. Questions?
Did the insurance company have concern about if there is an alcohol served on the premises?
No. Now, if we take the precautions that I outlined in the memo with regards to the certificate of insurance, listing the city as an additional insurer.
I'm just thinking of the people leaving the building to get in a car.
Excuse me?
I'm just thinking of a person leaving the building, getting in a car, and having an accident. Does it come back? Does it fall back to where
I'm sure they would.
Like a bar?
I'm sure they would sue everybody associated with it. That's why we would have this, you know, we're covered as a city through our insurance. We'd be going after the organization that was hosting the event as well, too. I'm sure if something like that happened, they're going to sue everybody that they can.
Ron?
Well, I think this has, can evolve to a pretty healthy business as far as, you know, having five rentals available. And I think about how we've operated the Boyne Area Senior Center. We have a capital improvement and maintenance fund. And as things wear out, there's things we still need in here as far as video, audio, video, and, you know, equipment, future equipment for this. And I don't know, something to think about having a line item that are finances that shows what we've collected and have that money set aside for future maintenance, because this could be a big hit. I mean, this is a great place to, and a great venue for a lot of different events, so.
I agree with you.
That won't stop us from going forward tonight. I think I'm satisfied with the presentation that's here. I think it's well thought out, and I support it.
Thank you, Ron. Dean?
Yeah, I have several questions. Building on what you were saying, operationally, how does that priority system work? I mean, for the most part, if a date was open, you get it, right? Unless
correct.
There was some existing, unless yeah. Two things arrive at the same moment. And
yes.
You
yes. Okay.
But
and to be candid, after talking to staff and further reviewing that, it really hasn't come into play very many times in the past where we've had to actually fall back on that policy.
Well, along those lines, you're very comfortable with all the groups that you talked about, wanting to use it or currently have used it, whether from the private sector, public sector, the fee schedule, all that sort of thing. It seems to me like City Hall is a civic building, and our priority is things that have a civic function, or that help to serve groups that create a better environment for Boyne City residents, you know, whether that's our nonprofits or for-profit groups and so on. It just gives me a little bit more pause for this facility as a wedding venue and for birthday parties and private personal events. My sense is it could be pretty popular for that because, I mean, where else could you go and have a small wedding on a deck overlooking Lake Charlevoix for $100? And my concern is that it becomes so popular that it interferes with our primary mission, which is to serve civic uses within the community. So two things come to mind. First of all, I think that we should give just a little bit more thought to how we create the rules and priorities and boundaries for those the private personal event side of the demand. And secondly, I think that within this, the priority system sort of does that. But I wonder if we could, as a matter of policy, develop a statement that says this is the city facility that we have, and these are the you know, it's a civic facility for the greater good and all, the sort of language that would give a tool for the city manager to be able to make decisions about how to manage the potential demand. So that you have this tool to say, well, I have to say no to you and yes to you, because quite clearly, you know, here's our written policy philosophically about the kinds of things that we think are of highest priority in our or the true intent of this facility. I'm not sure I said that all very articulately, but to really have that as a tool to say yes or no. And then I think sooner rather than later, I know it'd be good to be able to make it up as we go based on our experience and modify our policies there. But I think for that one category of private events, especially things like weddings, that we might want to place some more boundaries on that earlier rather than later.
Or more charge.
I'm not so concerned myself about the charge.
No, but I think it potentially could be.
Right.
You know, I mean, most people that are looking for a place for a wedding venue are going to pay a lot more than $100.
Now you go to a barn for $500.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then, you know, to Hugh's point about, you know, we could book out way in advance because that's what weddings are booked. We can't change the rules after you already told somebody to do this or what the boundaries for that would be. So that's the one case I think we might have to think about it a little bit. Or have a policy screen.
Thank you.
Yeah, in my last job, we had a city facility that we rented out all the time. It was, and it was kind of like under the management, but it was under my duties. So this is familiar. I know I talked to Mike when this was being created about some of the things that we did. As far as the alcohol, we never had an issue. They provide the certificate of insurance, and that was like totally normal. And there were, it was like 200 person, like you could do a 200 person wedding in the space that we had. And so, I mean, there were big weddings there, you know, serving alcohol. Different groups would sell the alcohol and that. I mean, we never had any issue of it while I was there, and I never knew of any. The weddings are a whole different ball game. We had special rules for weddings versus everyone else that rented the facility. So, I heard you guys talk, that's been my experience. Because there's just loads of questions that come from brides that don't come from anyone else.
Well, it's only a $100 deposit, and you think about the cake and the pop and the beverages that get spilled on the floor, and what it costs to have somebody come in here with the, you know, the or a doctor or whatever they use.
The one big thing we always ran into with weddings that I never would have thought is like they tried to attach things to like the ceiling all the time. All the time. And like lights, turning lights across, and it was like just one of those, like no other, you don't have that problem with any other group.
Yeah.
So they were their own category in our.
I wonder if it might be, you know, based on those comments, and we're looking at what other communities have done with that, those special rules for weddings, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's a special day for the participants. It's got to be, you know, you really want it to be just so. And, you know, for instance, being all of a sudden, you know, you thought you could, but now you can't put things, you know, the stuff on the ceiling or whatever.
And you don't want to ruin it.
You don't want to ruin it for them. So I think having those boundaries up front would be a benefit to us.
Oh, I think you should.
Yeah. And then, you know, how far in advance can you do that? And also with any, for instance, you know, think about. And, based on, you know, perhaps on others' experiences.
Mike, I know we're coming to the first of the year. Is there a need to get this done before the first of the year just because people are going to want to reserve this, start reserving the room? So do we have time to work through some things, or is it going to delong? Okay. I would like to, you know, I think we're going in the right direction, but as Dean has said, I kind of like, you know, maybe if we could just see the final policy polished and what it really is going to be. That we could consider at our next meeting. And it's going to get out that we're talking about some of these sorts of things, and maybe we'll hear something from the community, or the community will respond to something.
Oh, just to clarify, this is the policy that he is presenting. You're saying let's polish it through time, not by next month.
I'm here to do different things. I'm comfortable going forward with the policy. And if the commission's not, and you want to table it and think about it further, if you want me to add something to it, I mean, you're going to have to give me something to change versus what I presented to you for today.
Right. That was what I was going to say.
Well,
let me weigh in.
Okay.
It's my turn. I'm in favor of this. I'm also in favor of these are legitimate concerns with private parties or graduation parties or birthday parties, because they're private and you are competing with the local market that supplies those type of entertainment centers. So it's a little bit different than, as you said, the civic part of it. But with that being said, I'm in favor of moving forward and tweak it as we go. I would, what the high school does, or the Portland City Public School does, is a big event after hours, like a Saturday night wedding, there's a paid employee at the, that would be paid for by the wedding party. So someone would be on duty, on staff, that would be here to take care of anything that might arise. Discipline-wise, cleaning-wise, bathroom-wise, doors, locks, anything that might happen. And that would be at the expense of the person and, that's running the party. So that'd be something that we might consider tweaking so that we would have someone responsible representing the city. I do like creating a separate line item so we do see how much money we generate. And we can use that, as Rod said, to enhance, repair, fix, upgrade, and or, if we throw in the $1,200 a month for the ministry extension, then you're talking about a substantial amount of money that could pay out a little bit every year on the fund for building the process, for the, what do you call it? The
debt retirement.
Debt retirement for the bond. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to say. I have no problem with alcohol. Charlevoix County has alcohol at Wayne's Park. Emmett County has alcohol at the at their big event. We have alcohol at the pavilion. I don't see that as being a problem. But I can see a wild wedding party creating some accidents that we don't want. So I don't know. That's why an employee might be a good idea to be on staff. So, back to discussion, I wanted to weigh in. I would be in favor of moving forward with this motion and taking a year. I don't think that if we give Mike a month that we've laid out any new things that he hasn't already thought of. That we, so I, we have a couple options. Pass it as presented or not pass it, but lots of different options. So it's up to my commission here.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dean. I'd be comfortable with this if we could hold off on budget maybe until we had a better articulated policy. Because that seems to be the one event that, Kelsey can get in. And I had experience with that in, when I worked at one facility, that it's a different kind of thing. With different expectations on the part of both perhaps us and the part of the participants of the wedding and also planning. So that, if we do this and then hold off on weddings and then ask Mike and city staff to explore policies that would help us manage weddings specifically, that would be, I think, a good starting point. And then we have the additional opportunity as we move along and you see other types of events or things that we might want to treat the policy as we go. Experience.
Is a wedding any different than a graduation party or a birthday party?
I would say yeah.
I would think that if you have the policies in place so that if someone is considering doing a wedding, they want a better wedding. If they know they're not getting anything, they know all the set policies that go with it, then they can make their decision as to whether they want to hear or not. It can be part of their decision-making process. But if the rules are set in place, then I would anticipate that there would be any greater problem than a graduation party or anything else.
Well, I'd like to make a motion and then maybe we can have discussion so we have a point, we can go back and forth for a long time here. I would make a motion that we approve the recommended building use guidelines, but not allow weddings until a future date when we have a clear policy on using the building for weddings.
I think that says it very well.
I would second that.
Do we have a second? Oh, okay. And now discussion.
Yeah, no discussion.
I should hear from Mike. What are your thoughts?
I can work with that, and I can give me direction. That's fine.
The whole idea of private parties doesn't set well with me, but, you know, I don't know how, if there's big demand for it, I don't know how many we host, you know, those types of things. It just, you know, I guess at the same time, maybe we could do the civic definition or what you were talking about.
Sort of statement of
us. Some statement of use or something, just so we're all on the same page. Because I'm not sure we're all thinking the same use of the building here.
We have hosted private parties in the past under the old policy at the old city facility. We had groups that were booked for like birthday, maybe some birthday parties, but mainly like Christmas parties and things of that nature. We had one family on a regular basis. But then, and you talk about the demand, remember what the old building was like.
Oh yeah, right.
I mean, there really wasn't a reason that you'd want to go there.
Yeah.
It was tired.
Well, on the same other hand, we have Stig, which hosts parties. We have Kathleen. You know, there's other businesses that have opened as well. That, you know, that I hate to get into a situation where we're competing against, you know, private business, thinking, you know, we got a business going here that we're going to be able to buy new carpet because we've got this. You know, I that's not what I see for this building.
So the motion is still, can you state the motion?
Approve the building use guidelines, but not allow weddings until we have a better plan.
Can Dean add one more to that? And a position paper defining civic? Would you mind if that would be attached to your motion?
That would be fine. And what I was going to add is a statement of intent for the use of civic facilities.
I just wanted to make it all clear. So give much more direction.
I'm not sure that's way more direction.
No.
I don't think it does. No. I think totally two different things.
Yeah, I think it's different things.
But the motion that's before that was introduced by Hugh was basically allowing the plan to go forward as it is, except for weddings, which are called out until we further define and come up with a policy on that, and then this matter comes back before the commission. For allowing graduation parties and birthday parties and other things, that doesn't fall in. I'm not quite sure how I align that with just civic functions only. Or a civic statement purpose.
Right. Well, I think that the priority system that you have sort of serves a purpose. I think it would be strengthened by a better statement. But I think that can wait. If we want to evolve it. So I guess I wouldn't be as concerned about that today, since it might model things just a little bit. The direction we're
going. Very good.
The last party sent at the library, and that might be a pretty good model. You know how they're managing it.
You know, I believe they did restrict that because there are some things that they say they can't do.
Yeah, there's no private party,
no private
there's
parties.
No alcohol.
Right.
Well, can I amend the motion to eliminate private parties at this point until that comes back in the whole wedding discussion? Is that an appropriate thing to do?
No, I think your original, it just seems to me the original motion is we'll get it started. That can be tweaked as we go too.
So we use the word tweaked a lot. What does tweak mean to people?
Define it.
Answer all the questions.
Will we know what the questions are?
Well, I think what Mike is saying is that as he observes it being rented out, he can make adjustments as needed. That would be my definition of a tweak. And he'd come back to us with policy change.
I'd come back to you, or else we'd hear of other complaints or issues or things of that nature. I mean, I go back to like the ATV discussion, and that was the kind of the same philosophy we went forward with the ATV discussion. The rules were changing based on a policy from the state about allowing them on, possibly about allowing them on roads. We basically said as a community, we're going to, we check into it, we're going to allow these on roads, and then if there's a problem, we're going to come back, or if we have to make some adjustments or something that we didn't anticipate. That's the same philosophy I'm trying to go forward, or recommend that we go forward with here. if there are no issues that rise to the occasion, then I wouldn't be coming back and asking for adjustments or tweaks or whatever you want to call them. If we do find some problem that we didn't anticipate, I believe within the existing rules and regulations, the ones that are currently in the book, I have the ability to kind of slow things down, stop them, put a moratorium on, and say, okay, we need to relook at this and come back and say, okay, this isn't working out the way we anticipated. Again, we want to make sure that we protect the integrity of this facility the best as possible. It is a resource for the community, the taxpayers have paid for it. We've got, what I'm trying to help commission find is what's that right balance for how this building is used by our citizens.
And the citizens who are citizens of the city, there's already, isn't there a difference in what they pay for the facility than outside?
There was on the old fee schedule, and they had a different placing on the priority.
And I should think that, I mean, this is a beautiful building, and the people of the city own it in a way. So it would be something that they could appreciate being available. But definitely the rules have to be set. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
So let's clarify. So the motion is to go forward without weddings. Is that still the motion that you want?
Well, then, well, yeah. Oh, it's been seconded. Yeah.
It's not up to me. Am I properly going through this process?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you brought up the possibility of amending that motion further. I mean, that is a legitimate discussion point to have. If you want to amend the motion, you can do that. It's up to the commission to determine where it wants to go. This is one of those policy questions that staff brings to you to give direction.
So if we were to amend the motion, Mike, what would I do right now?
Usually you as the maker of the motion would amend your motion. You would basically then go to the supporter of the motion to see if he supports the amendment. Then technically I believe you have to vote on the amendment, and then that becomes, if it approves, that becomes your main motion, and then you vote on the main motion.
So I believe in this case, if you wanted to amend it, you'd change the words wedding to private parties.
Yeah. I would like to amend it then to say private parties, overall private parties, and not just specify weddings.
So then it would go to Ron to see whether he supported your change or wanted to leave it at the original motion. Mm-hmm.
It's not like the original motion.
So that
means that
the original motion stands. Okay. You would vote on the original motion. If the commission wanted the original motion, you approve it. You vote on it. If it's approved, it goes forward. If it's not, then you start over.
Reopen the motion. Right.
Yes.
Another option is you can withdraw the motion.
Too bad.
It's like Friends of the Point River. If they wanted to have a Christmas party here or have a fundraising party or party for the members or something, and have a party in the, you know, in the rule book, it's representing.
Well, using that as an example, they're a nonprofit organization, so they would be allowed
that's
to
true.
Do that.
But still, it's a party, and then how do you...
No, that's a private party.
That would be a private party?
Yes. It's a private party held by a nonprofit group that would not be then charged for it.
So I think the original motion is well stated, because that could cover a lot of bases as far as rules.
Too bad the students left before we had this discussion. They could have learned something.
I know.
Okay, I'll call for the vote. The next, what we do, call for the vote, end discussion, call for the vote.
The original motion?
On the motion.
Well, yeah, that's what we have to do. Yeah.
That include that.
Exclude weddings.
Excludes weddings. We're all set to go there. Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
No.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving on. Item E, Taser CEW.
Thank you. It should be noted that this was put in place here so we have a way to control those parties.
The discussion, the use of the old ones here, Charlie.
The person on staff that has to be done already was a police officer.
I want to go to some of those parties.
Okay, I'll proceed.
Thank you.
The ongoing process of updating our police department equipment, we're looking at replacing the current tasers. Tasers are a brand name, and the taser is a conductive electrical weapon, CEW, uses high voltage, low amps to subdue combative subjects by disrupting the nerve signals and muscles. It's a tool that we've been using since 2010. We purchased the original tasers, the CEWs, in 2010 and 2011 with drag race money, which was a fundraiser for the police department. There was some city funds used for subsequent purchase of a couple more of the units. But they've come to their, I would say, the end of their useful life. They are out of warranty now. The recommended service life of the Taser brand CEWs is 5 years. We're in the 7 year range now. We don't have any failures with them, but that's not something that we want to experience. The Axon company, it used to be called Taser, now it's the Axon company. They still label the CEWs as Tasers. So they've done some extensive, they've done a lot of extensive testing, research, and they have done all the medical testing, all the legal testing. They stand firmly behind the units. And we have an on-staff person that's been trained by Taser, and we receive updates every year so that our officers are current with the training and the legalities of the use of Tasers. So we're at that point now where we're looking at purchasing new Tasers for the officers. Total cost for the new tasers with the holsters, cartridges, the data port download unit, and an extended 5 year warranty is $9,810. We explained the data port download unit is actually a cable and some computer equipment that allows our in-house instructor to download the information right from the tasers, and we do that on a semi-annual basis, and it records every event that was ever done, ever used with that particular piece of equipment. So it's like a mini computer. The taser itself is like a mini computer. We hook it up to our computer, it downloads all the information. That way we are confident that they haven't been used with our knowledge or something, you know. And every time they are used, we go through a review process. Goes in our use of force review process, which is reviewed by the assistant chief as well as myself to make sure that all the policies are followed. So it's been a great tool for us, a great asset to the department. I know there's been a lot of studies nationwide that show that tasers have reduced injuries to not only the officers but suspects. And it's something that we want to continue to utilize. And we received a $10,000 donation from John McCloud's Classic Instruments. We had that check presentation here not too long ago. Graciously donated that amount of money for us to purchase equipment. So we do have the money in the budget to purchase it with that donation. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to take a shot at it.
Thank you. Any comments from audience? All right. Over to the Board of Deliberation. You?
Jeff, so I assume this is a really important tool for the police department. So So what would we have done if we wouldn't have gotten a gift of $10,000 for classic instruments?
Well, hopefully we would have been able to budget for that.
For next year?
For that money and purchase them. We did purchase some of them in 2010, some of them, a couple of them in 2011. We have a couple of them that are newer, we could rotate through them. Like I said, they haven't failed, but they're not supported by computer, the updates and that kind of stuff. And they are worn out house belts on a daily basis, and they take a toll by, just being exposed to elements and all the things that producers do. So it's something that I feel before they fail, before it turns into something bad, we should update them, and that's something we certainly will look at the budget, the money for.
Yeah, you've taken me on a journey through the web a little bit with new cars last time and then tasers this time to just learn about them. And this company suggests that we just have a line item, because it's a real important thing, and each year just have a line item, and that's why they offer the 5 years, because that's the life expectancy. So, maybe in the future budget we could just have a line item to make sure that it's always covered. It seems really important to me.
One of the options that I think I outlined that we're getting a significant discount by purchasing them now. There was a combination of things. One of them was the 5-year plan, and what they're suggesting is that we pay this over a period of 5 years to even out the budget. So we do have that option. However, we have the money to do it, and so they are going to allow us to make a one payment for it, but under the 5-year warranty, which normally if you make a one payment, the 5-year warranty isn't included.
Oh. That's all I have.
Thank you. Ron? Oh, I support the purchase. I'm very grateful to Classic Instruments, and John, your personal efforts that you put forth for the city here are just to be commended. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been with the police department long enough to know what it was like before we had tasers, and then to go through the training and now be able to carry them. And they are just, they're a very much needed tool, and it gives the officers that option that we never had before. And it's a phenomenal tool and very much needed.
No comments other than to echo Ron's thanks to Classic Instruments and Utah.
Well, having worked in prosecution for a lot of years, I can understand the need and the use, and it's nice that you were able to get all of it.
I'm in full support.
Well, I'd make a motion we approve the purchase of new Taser CEWs and associated equipment for $9,810. Using funds donated by Classic Instruments.
Second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page.
Aye.
Solomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Crunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Item F is request from the city manager to go into closed session to consider the purchase of real property that's provided in MCL 15.268D of the Michigan Open Meetings Act, PA 2667 of 1976. We probably will not have any action items when we come out of closed session, is that correct? Man?
Correct.
So we can go on to item 10 and 11. And so number 10 is good of the order.
I have nothing.
Okay, so?
I don't have anything.
Okay. And announcements, the City Commission orientation session is scheduled for this Friday, lunch at 11:30. Session begins at noon in City Hall. The next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, January 9th, 2018, 7 p.m. So, I will make a motion to close the open session.
To go into closed session.
Into closed session, okay, I'm sorry. I'll make a motion to go into closed session at this time.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.